Welcome back to Too Much Future, episode something. I've forgotten. I don't know what episode this is.
How do numbers work anymore? How do things progress? We don't know.
You know, this is the only thing I'll say about it, because I'm really trying to keep contemporary issues, you know, out of the range touchiverse. But I do not know what day it is every day, and I don't know what time it is at any time.
Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, like, that's what happens, yeah, when Jill Stein outlaws calendar years.
But only calendar years.
The other years are fine.
Yeah, the other years are A-okay. It's the calendar years that are bad. But I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael.
After much wasteland running around, we went to Broken Hills.
Uh-huh, we did.
We've been to many places. You went to this place, roughly a month ago.
Yeah, no. So my I have notes, but like my memory is vague in some respects, which we will encounter in our discussion, I think.
Well, I played it last night, so hopefully between the two of us, between my slapdash bad playing and your foggy memory, we'll be able to roughly reconstruct probably like one or two things that have happened in this game. Broken Hills is a mining town.
Again.
Wait, what was the last mining town? Oh, Redding is also a mining town, right?
Yes.
Why is everyone in a mining town? So here's a question for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in Gecko.
Okay.
We were told, hey, if you can get more ore delivered to us, we'll be able to run our plant better.
Yes.
And I thought that had something to do with Redding, but clearly it didn't. That must have something to do with Broken Hills then, but I didn't get a quest for that here. Did you?
No, I did not.
Interesting. Wonder if I gotta like do a character. Anyway, we'll get into it. Listeners to Mages and Murder Dads will notice that I can say Broken Hills perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the Windspear Hills. Oh my god, it's so hard. You know, check out, I don't know, episode 40 or whatever of the other show to learn all about that. But Broken Hills, making my way to Broken Hills, I died a bunch of times along the way, of course, as is Tungsten's desire, because again, I am still playing the game with the spear that I got in the second screen of the game.
There have been no other hammer-like weapons that have availed themselves.
There are plenty. There are plenty of melee weapons in this game. None of them are better than the sharpened spear. So, until you get, like, the higher, you know, like, the powered melee weapons. So, I'm still cranking along here, which is great. And on my way, you remember the Morton brothers?
Oh, yeah.
I got attacked by one.
Oh, neat.
Has that happened to you yet?
No, because remember, I did this before I did Redding.
Well, I'm just assuming. I guess you haven't really played very much after Redding, so that makes sense. But I'm assuming that now, through the rest of the game, until we encounter all of Throgmorton's siblings, they're going to be out there hunting this down. And to be honest with you, they straight up murdered me. It was terrible. Oh. They've got, like, multiple people in their party. They had SMGs. One had shotgun. And so they shot me to death. But I thought that was a real cool, like, little bit of world building that, like, the Morton brothers are still out there. And, like, good luck fighting them.
So, like, so they killed you and, I mean, did you just, like, reload and then not encounter them again?
Yeah, it was a random encounter.
Okay, yeah. I'm making my plans for when I'm now wandering the wasteland, when they show up and just destroy me, probably. Well, when they tear their way through my five large sons and destroy me.
Okay, well, that's a big question here. Did you get... is one of your large sons from Broken Hills?
No, because you have to complete a quest that requires you to leave Broken Hills first before... Well, unless you're talking about someone else. But, like, the large son that Eleanor now has her eyes on will not join the party until we resolve the central conflict of Broken Hills, which we cannot do until we actually do some more traveling.
based on this conversation, I believe I might have missed a quest or two. But so you get there, and you immediately meet a dude named Steve.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about Steve, Michael?
Well, I remember that Steve yelled at me because I didn't put my weapons away, which is a thing that was an annoying feature of the first game, that people would constantly be angry at you unless you went into your inventory and put away your weapons. It's not as relevant here in Fallout 2, except if you're in Broken Hills. So, to give you an idea of why this is annoying, right? He will not talk to you, not only if you, the player character of Twelinor, has her gun out, but if any of my party members have their weapons out. So I have to go through and have every single party member put away their weapon.
Yep. Yep, I had the same thing happen. Great. Thanks, yeah. Steve.
Yep, and I believe, is he the one who tells you about, like, what the... Is he, like, the... As these games work, right, there's always, like, the NPC that you run into when you first enter town who tells you basically what the deal is.
Yes. And what's weird about that here is that this is the most... like, Fallout Inheritor section of the game that I've encountered so far.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, meaning that, like, this straight up feels like you could change some... You could take the quests that are here, right? You could take the dialogue from here, and you could pop it out, and you could put it on, like, a planet in Mass Effect, and it would just basically be the same thing.
Wait, what?
Like, you don't think that the way that Broken Hills is set up is, like, a little bit different than the rest of this game?
Oh. Like, I thought you meant, like, that this could be transferred to Mass Effect without any changes. And I was like, are you talking about?
No. But, like the way that people talk and, like, the kind of tone and the way the quests are so... Are really kind of cut and dried here in a way that they're not anywhere else. I don't know. It really feels like... future BioWare-y style games a lot to me.
And yes, I would say that I think I agree. I mean, there is a big quest, as I mentioned, that you have to go to another place to finish, or at least for me. I don't know how things have worked out for Tungsten. But yeah, no, this place feels separate. Well, in the same way that I think, what the heck was the last place called? Reading. Mm-hmm. Reading was also kind of self-contained. But it didn't feel, you're right, in is sort of like Fallout-y, or not Fallout-y, but like BioWare-y, and it was like, in the sense that's like, well, welcome to town, stranger, here's our gimmick.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about the tone here that is part of that too, because right, when you talk to Steve, I'm saying all this to get back to Steve, when you talk to Steve, he's like, yep, so here in this town, we got, you know, we're a mining town, we ship ore to different places. You want to hear more? And you can be like, yes, Steve, I want to hear more. And he's like, well, you know, we ship it to Vault City, and they're racists there, and we're not like that. We live in a place with ghouls and the mutants, and we're all doing pretty fine because we have different ethics than they do. You want to hear more? Yes. And it's just this kind of like, it is, you know, again, it's this very 1990s style humor of being like, we all know the genre here. We all know what my, like, character position is as a character. And it's like hanging a lampshade on the fact that he is just here to kind of, like, give information to you about this place. And it's told in this kind of, like, sardonic, sarcastic kind of, like, well, do you need to hear more information from me? Well, okay, I'll give it to you. And it's like, and this, I think, you know, is another kind of cornerstone of that Fallout humor of, like, we're all in on the joke, and so this is all stupid anyway.
Right. Right, this is the thing that I have complained about before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you've pointed out, like, several really good examples of it happening. And it's just, like, it's very grating first, I think, that it's, like, to some degree, I think it's just, like, not willing to own up to the fact that you're making this kind of thing. You know, I don't know, just like,
I mean, it's you know, it's cynical ideology.
it's a good old Sloterdijk.
Yep. Peter Sloterdijk, if you're out there, if you're listening, come on Too Much Future, and we will discuss Fallout 2.
Oh my god, I'm gonna send Peter Sloterdijk an email. I'm writing it down right now.
Okay. Okay, great. We're going to see if we can get a German critical theorist to join us for this discussion.
He had a TV show for a number of years.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, like a talk show. It was basically like Hardball, but with Peter Sloterdijk. which is, you know, that's fun.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But everyone in this place kind of talks in that voice. And so, I don't know, it just kind of...
Yes, they do. Okay, yes. No, now I'm sort of seeing what you're getting at.
Right, yeah. And so in the same way that, like, everyone on the Citadel is kind of like, we're on the Citadel, we're all here, and we all have a very similar kind of, like, tone and ethic and, like, central set of core concerns we talk about. Or, like, in KOTOR in particular, too. Like, when you get quests from people and, like, everything always ends up being related to, like, the same two ideas that anyone has.
Right.
And it's this kind of like rhetorical way to have you keep thinking about it over and over again. Everything kind of like, I don't know, it's like almost in a vortex, I think, in Broken Hills, where we're like swirling around the same one or two things. But
well, speaking of, what is the vortex that we're all swirling around here, aside from the fact that we're a mining town?
Well, I think it's the mining town part is number one, the vortex. And the other part, I guess, would be murder.
Well, I was going to say, like, multiculturalism.
It is yeah.
Right?
Multiculturalism with a side of murder.
Yes. So, like, the hook of Broken Hills, right, the conceit of this place, is that humans, super mutants, and ghouls all live here together. In this way, it is much like, you know, medieval Toledo in Spain, the city of three cultures, where... Muslims, Jews, and Christians all lived side by side. That's Michael's history 4 seconds. Anyway, what we're doing in Broken Hills is... Broken Hills has a very weird political imaginary. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
This is, in some sense, an almost planned community, as I think Steve tells you, that it was sort of founded to be... a place where these disparate groups of people in the wasteland who are normally at each other's throats should come here to live together when they are tired of fighting each other, which is a very strange way to found a town, but things were put in this fashion by the town founders, Marcus, who is a super mutant, and Jacob, who was a Brotherhood of Steel member. And I don't know if he tells you that or if that's something you learn from Marcus later.
Marcus tells you that.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Do we know? I meant to look this up beforehand, but did we meet Jacob in the previous game?
I don't think we did. And again, it's been a month now. I remember having that same question, and I remember looking it up, and I remember finding out that there was one. I'm pretty sure there was a Jacob Brotherhood of Steel member, but two, he was clearly not this Jacob.
Got it. And Marcus we didn't meet either, right?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe we did. but probably not. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure that was the case. Yeah, and so it's like, how did these two wacky fellas come together in the wasteland to invent a whole new city? That's my drive time radio DJ voice.
Come to Broken Hills to find out.
Go, you gotta go to the Broken Hills. Can you imagine how they got there? They must have had to rough and tumble all the way across the desert. Oh, there you go.
So anyway, literally, that is what happened. We discovered.
They fought each other for a couple days, is what Marcus says.
Yeah, a day or two is his specific estimation.
It's just like the opening cinematic to Warcraft 3.
Yeah. So, like, what we learn here in terms of timeline, right, is after the Vault Dweller took care of the Master. the super mutant and mutant forces just like totally fell apart. And then I'm not really sure why Jacob was out wandering around in the desert, but he encounters Marcus, and then he and Marcus fight, and they fight for 2 days. And then at the end of 2 days, when neither of them is dead, they decide to respect each other and then found a town.
Yep. and like people follow them because they're like, God, he calls him an Iron Knight or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I had not encountered that term before, and I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, the idea that like there are like two people with miniguns running around, and it's like, well, if you're gonna follow somebody,
right?
Might as well be the two people with big miniguns.
Did you get a lot as Tungsten? Did you get a lot of dialogue out of Marcus? Because as I said, this town has a very strange political imaginary, and Marcus is a great example of it.
Yeah, Marcus will like tell me. Oh, and just to be clear, so like Jacob is dead, right?
Yes, Jacob is dead, which is confusing because there is yet another Jacob in this town who we will talk about later.
Yeah, there are two Jacobs, which is deeply confusing. But yeah, so Jacob is dead, and Marcus is like still around because he's a super mutant. And, you know, he just has a longer life. But yes, yes, I did. And I guess he's the sheriff too now. But he told me about his political philosophy, which I thought was very interesting.
It is so interesting. So if you for some reason have not played Fallout 1 or did not watch our first season of this show, the super mutants came about because this thing, guy, entity, force called the Master wanted to dip all the humans into the forced evolutionary virus and make them into super mutants, and then have an army that he could then use to take over the remains of the nuclear holocaust decimated United States. We stopped that in the first game, and you can probably tell from me recapping the story that the Master was not a particularly good guy, right? Did not really have people's best interests at heart. But Marcus is still a true believer.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you're talking to him about it, you're like, well, how'd you feel about the Master? And he was like, well, I mean, it was pretty good that, like, people could communicate with one another and could, like, some people could rise to the challenge of, like, creating order out of the, like, bad parts of the wasteland.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And he's, I guess if I had to describe Marcus, he's kind of this chastened but unrepentant Nietzschean.
Because you want to unpack that one for me?
Well, so he talks about you can ask him, you know, like, so Marcus, like, obviously things didn't go great for the Master, why is that? And his response is that the Master was actually just too promiscuous in choosing people to be super mutants, and yeah. So he was creating inferior people to create inferior stock, making bad super mutants that weakened the overall cause. And in fact, he will tell you that, like, there are just straight up certain people who should have been dipped, and people who didn't deserve to become super mutants. Jacob is one of them. Jacob is one that he wished he could have become a super mutant. He feels like he would have been a really great asset to the Master's cause. But at the same time, despite Marcus saying, we just had a better way, that's a direct quote, this didn't work out, and now he's just kind of like, it was still the right thing to do, and it could have been done better, and I still believe it, but also I'm not really going to do anything in service of this idea or this ideology. He says that, like, if anyone kind of gets too powerful or too great or pursues anything of, like, too much importance, then, and this is another quote, the masses will always destroy them. So they should have only taken the best, right? So there's, I mean, I called him a Nietzschean. You might also say there's a bit of a weird Ayn Rand vibe going on here. But yeah, so he can ask him, like, why did you want to enslave humanity? And he responds, because I knew them. So the idea that there are just, they're, well, normally when you hear this kind of talk, right, they're saying that there are certain people who should just be in charge of other people. And in this case, he's saying that there are certain people who should not be people anymore and should then be in charge of other people.
Yeah. And so, like, on one hand, this is probably the most robust conversation you can have in this video game about, like, political philosophy and, like, the political philosophy of the world of Fallout in a general sense, right? This is maybe more complicated than what the Master had to say in Fallout 1.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is.
It has more shades of gray in it. But I think you can see, like, in the conversation with Marcus, this is, like, every BioWare, like, middle-of-the-game villain to come. Like, you can see how he could be, like, you could take this character type out and you could, like, plop it into Mass Effect 2 and he would be, like, the guy on a planet that you gotta, like, choose to kill or, like, help, you know, I don't know, rehabilitate, right?
Right.
Like, he's got a logic, he's got a reason for why he wants to be, he's quote-unquote good villain writing, and obviously he's not a villain in this case, but, like, you know, like, you put him on some planet out in the back middle of nowhere, he's dipping people, but he's only dipping the smart people, and they're actually doing good things, but they don't want to be dipped. You know, so I don't know. I see a lot of, like, where RPGs went over the next 10, 15 years in Marcus in particular here.
Well, that's very interesting. And as we've sort of suggested, Marcus will join your party. But he will not join your party until you've completed some quests around town. So I'm going to see if I don't remember what Twelinor's charisma stat is, but once we get a certain quest completed, I'm going to come back and see if Marcus thinks I am important enough and strong enough to follow around the wasteland.
Well, I mean, so this is interesting. So I, after I completed several quests here, none of which made me leave Broken Hills because he told me not to. I was able to get far enough where I say, hey, you want to join my party? And he just tells me my charisma's too low. And that could be because it checks your charisma first and then it gives me the qualifier for the quest. I mean, so that could be the scenario there. But yeah, I have the option to ask him, but he's like, yeah, you're not, I don't like you enough.
Oh.
or, you know, he's like, your party's too full with your two plebeians. So there's, like, a bunch of quests here. I guess I can, like,
quote unquote a bunch.
Well, there were more than I thought there would be. this town is only, like, three screens.
The two quests that Marcus told me about, one is that there are missing people have gone missing. And that there are some supplies that are needed for the mine, and I should go talk to Zaius.
Oh, I did not do this mine quest.
Oh, okay.
I did missing people.
Okay. Well, I mean, just the mine quest is the one that I did not complete. But the basics of it are this. We've already mentioned that there is a, is it plutonium or uranium mine?
Yes.
Some sort of, so like this place mines, you know, some sort of nuclear material. And ships it out to the other places, Vault City. It's actually, so it is basically Redding, but with uranium instead of gold, right? So anyhow, I went into the mine and I talked to Zaius, and I was like, what the heck? So there, you go to the mine and there's all these super mutants standing around outside because all the super mutants work in the mine because, you know, working around radioactive material doesn't kill them, I guess. But I talked to Zaius, who's kind of like the foreman, and he is like, oh, our filter is broke. Like, they have a air filter in there, I guess. Again, I'm not quite sure if the super mutants can work in there because they're already radioactive, then why do they need the air filter? Anyway, because the filter is broken, they need parts to fix this. And Zaius is like, yeah, the place that would have it is in New Reno. So go to New Reno and do that. And I was like, I am not going to New Reno right now. I literally just got to town. I'm going to do some other things.
Okay, so yeah, so I did get this quest. I guess, like, that Marcus, it is just checking my charisma first, because I did get this quest, and I did not complete it. Just smaller stuff, I guess, before talking about, like, the bigger ones. Did you reroute the power for that guy, for, like, Eric?
Oh, yes, Eric.
I think that's his name, right? Or that's... Yeah.
It's a very funny Fallout kind of thing, where it's like, did you reroute the power for Eric?
Yeah, and they're both ghouls, right? So there's a ghoul named Brian who works in the generator room, and he's just managing the generator for the town. That's his whole deal. And there's a dude named Eric who unfortunately sweats like fly nutrients.
Yes.
When he sweats, his body like emits something that makes flies hyper attracted to him, and so he's covered in flies all the time if he's sweating. And so I'm talking to the guy, and he's like, hey, can you just go and reroute the power? I used to be the guy who worked in the power plant, but then one of the flies got in some of the electrical equipment, and they fired me, and now Eric is there. So, like, I just need a little bit more power so that I can turn my air conditioner on, and I won't sweat so much. Can you help me out? And for some reason, he has also a felt painting of Elvis on the floor.
Yeah, Velvet Elvis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Velvet, I guess not felt. So I picked that up, too. And then, I just went and manually changed the thing using my science skill.
Well, that's very out of character for Tungsten.
No, Tungsten is good at three things. Stabbing things. He's good at energy weapons, even though he's never held one in his life. He's like 114% good. And he has a 100% in science because genetic ruination that his ancestor begat upon the world scrambled his doodads and what's-its in his DNA. And so he's good at science energy weapons for no good reason.
Well, congrats to Tonk.
Yeah.
I think how Telenor fixed this was I went and I talked to Brian at the plant, and basically I could threaten him into doing it, but I did not do that. I just persuaded him to do it because he was like, oh no, like, you know, you don't understand. It would be very complicated. I would have to do this, that, and the other. And then I could be like, you just don't want to like walk into the other room and flip the switch, do you? And he's like, yeah, kind of. And I said, you should really do this because you have enough power. You've already told me. Like, he gives you, like, a series of excuses. And each one you can just be like, you've already mentioned you have a surplus of power. Like, just give Eric... let Eric have his air conditioning clap emojis. And so that's how I fixed that. And then when I went back and talked to Eric, he was like, oh, thanks so much, you know, to help you out. Because I had asked him earlier... I'd walked into his house, letting all of the flies in, much to his dismay, and then I'd just been like, do you know where geks are? And he told me, well, I heard you were looking for a gek. I think you should probably go to the NCR, so...
Wow. He didn't tell me that at all.
Yeah.
He gave me buff out.
Here's some drugs, young man.
Yeah. That's interesting. He basically helps you in other quests, and so he gave me that specifically for another quest. Perhaps one of the most messed up quests in Fallout.
Oh, you did this one.
Yeah, what is the, what's the guy's name? The arm wrestling ghoul, or, super mutant? Everybody, this is Cameron in the edit. Just want to let you know that the conversation we're about to have deals with a quest that has sexual assault as part of it. It's uncomfortable. It's gross. If you want to skip forward about 8 or 9 minutes, if you don't want to hear any of that, you could do that. So just letting you know, get back to the show.
Something not particularly interesting, obviously, because I didn't even write it down, although I did write he's an arm wrestling super mutant.
His name is Francis.
That's it.
The wiki says he is clad in black leather, and boredom is written across his face. I don't know where that came from. okay. So you can... It's just like an arm wrestling you know, event that you can do. It's like all of the rest of them, you know, in RPG-dom, right? Fade to black, it happens, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
He says, this is a quote. I didn't write the full quote down, but here's mostly a quote. Arm wrestle, and if you win, I get a power fist, which is like a melee, or it's an unarmed weapon, mm-hmm. which is cool, and it's like worth a lot of money. And if I lose, I am, quote, this is a quote, you're my gimp for the night, unquote.
Yeah.
And you can really see this like post Pulp Fiction universe coming mm-hmm. in right now, right? This is terrible. This is awful. And this is awful in a million different ways. So, of course, Tungsten loses and is forced to have sex with Francis.
Huh.
Yeah. It's fucked up. Yeah, it's bad.
That's very bad.
It's bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's bad stuff. And here's the, like, here, there are so many, so you didn't do this at all?
Well, so here's the thing is, like, I remember doing this and just not winning, but, like, I didn't have, like, Eleanor did not get forced into having sex, right? That was not a thing that happened in this particular playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And I am sort of looking this up now because I want to see if it has something to do with, like, did I somehow argue my way out of this?
I don't know. I don't know. So you lost and this didn't happen to you?
I'm pretty sure, unless I just, like, told him to get bent.
So here's some things that happen. Number one, you're in your inventory, you now have a ball gag.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's like all kinds of stuff going on here, right? As you walk around the rest of Broken Hills as a location, people mm-hmm. make fun of you.
Oh my god.
Someone literally writes, it's barks, right, from NPCs. One says, quote, once you've known a mutie, you never go back.
Holy crap.
Right? And then people just, like, make fun of you about being, basically being dominated by Francis. So, like, the whole, like, every single part of this is just, like, it's just bad. I don't have additional language for it other than, like, it is a truly unfortunate and bad thing to put into a video game. It serves no purpose. It just becomes, like, the stock for jokes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just bad. Also, yeah. I think it's in his apartment that I also found a big inflatable sex doll that is named Tandy. These are all like individually created items too, like these are unique items as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got them in my inventory. I don't know, maybe if they come into play somewhere else. I'm certainly not going to have gone through all of this not to have these items in my inventory, but I mean,
you can get, I guess.
But it is truly like it's bad writing, it's bad design. It is like re-entrenching all of the worst values in our culture, like just straight up. I just don't care for it. It's not for me.
No, that is horrible. And I just looked this up and double checked, and I guess, like, I just didn't take him up on arm wrestling. I think I was probably mixing this up with one of the earlier places where you could also do an arm wrestling thing in one of the bars. So I guess he just, like, I don't know, challenged me or whatever, and I had no interest in, I knew I wasn't going to win an arm wrestling match, first of all. Like, I know what Twelinor's stats are. I did not encounter this, and it is massively messed up.
Yeah, it's no good. I'm going to give this 0 stars for quest design and game design. So that's like another small quest that can mm-hmm. happen, but really does have, like, big impacts. Literally everyone around town doesn't let you forget it, so it's, you know, blah. Other stuff. There's a guy in the jail named Manson. Did you talk to him?
What was his name?
Manson, like Charles Manson.
No, I didn't.
He just says, like, I'm a rebel against society. And I was like, I think that might be bad. What are you rebelling against? He's like, shut up, don't talk to me. And I'm assuming you could, like, have a more robust conversation with him, but I could not. But I thought it was really funny. He's just, like, mad about society. There's a guy named Doc Holliday there.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, like, a real jerk.
Yeah.
He, like, says he's a doctor, and you can, like, ask him questions, and he's just, like, a real sarcastic jerk about everything. And one of the responses I had to him was making me able to say, all right, just shut up and sell me stim packs already. he's got no stim packs in his inventory.
Huh.
Yeah. Well. So it's even more of this, like, kind of like, meta, like, I know what I'm talking to a doctor here for. Of course, this is a video game. Of course I'm talking to the doctor for stim packs. And, like, it doesn't even give me the thing I wanted.
Huh.
There
I listened
is...
to him. He, like, told me about his... He will, like, talk forever. Like, you can ask him about... like, what, like, tell me about Broken Hills, and he just, like, tells you his life story, which is very, like, sort of predictable and boring, about him wandering the wasteland and having a wife, and he mentions, like, going to San Francisco, or, like, he trained in San Francisco or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he trained in Chinatown.
Yes. And then, so, like, we know that there's San Francisco, and we know that Chinatown's still around, so that's interesting. And then because Twelinor listened nicely to everything, he then healed everyone in my party for free.
Yeah, at some point I chose, like, the not, like, rude response, and he was like, next time you need healing, let me know. I'll give it to you for free. But yeah, I'm assuming, I don't remember I didn't write down the name of the doctor that he trained under, but I'm assuming that that's a character we'll get to meet later in the game.
Yeah.
Let's see here. There is the intelligent Rad Scorpion.
I love this.
This is so good. And the follow-up is even better about the intelligent plant.
It is. This is, like, my highlight of this area. This is
Same.
So funny.
Absolutely. You want to talk about it?
So on the far side of, like, the third screen, or I guess it's the second screen because the third screen might be underground. Anyway, on the far side of one of the screens, there's, like, just this scientist hanging out named, like, the professor. And he has a rad scorpion that he has induced to be sapient and intelligent because he has fed it Mentats.
Which he invented Mentats.
Oh, yes, he invented Mentats and then, like, gave them to the Rad Scorpion. So now the Rad Scorpion has human-level intelligence. And he's, like, running a series of tests where basically you can go head-to-head with this intelligent Rad Scorpion in intelligence tests.
Or just in, like, all kinds of stuff. Because one of them is, like, a dexterity or an agility test.
Oh, that's right. It's not all just intelligence. Yeah, one of them, you have to, like, it's like a lock-picking test.
Yes, yes.
The third and final one is the intelligence test, which is where you have to play chess against the Rad Scorpion.
My favorite part about the chess section, I like all kinds of parts about this. I like when you win, because I only got to win one of these, of course. And your character's like, take that!
Yes!
It's like the amount that you've built up about the scorpion. But my favorite part about the chess one is that the professor says, it's a game of my own invention. Chess.
Yes! It's like a game of my own invention. You can also, like, accuse, when you lose, you can accuse the Rad Scorpion of cheating.
Oh, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I had the option to do that.
Well, I guess, yeah, I think I think it's, I guess it's, like, probably predicated on intelligence or something. But yeah, no, you can totally accuse the Rad Scorpion of cheating when you lose. And one of the reasons I was thinking about this, like, why I found this so delightful, when we have kind of not been too, like, I guess, happy about Fallout humor in this show generally and in previous episodes. And at least partly, and the story you told earlier about Francis is a good example of this. It's not crappy, terrible humor that's about how funny it is when horrible things happen to people. in ways that just, as you put it, re-entrench the worst aspects of our culture. But also, this is a joke that is not about how stupid playing a video game is. This is a joke that actually arises from the setting of Fallout.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it is built out of the pieces of Fallout, right? So exactly, the setting, right? And we know that, like, rad scorpions, they're just big scorpions, right? So, like, there's nothing special about them. And so, like, you get that classic kind of inversion humor, right? Of the thing that shouldn't be smart is smart. But also, what I really like about it is that it is built out of, like, the mechanics of Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are tests of your actual stats, right? Like, these are, like, one-to-one stats of thinking. And it forces you to be like, well, I guess this scorpion's got better stats than I do. I guess it's better at being a wasteland wanderer than I am. And so, like, the joke, I think, is like, I think you're exactly right. It's a joyful joke. And it's one that's, like, built out of it feels natural, right? It feels like it's a part of this world, and it's this right level of, like, goofiness.
Mm-hmm. Well, it taps into cynical. Like the like 1950s mad scientist thing.
Yes,
that Fallout is always kind of not too far from in a lot of respects.
Yeah, and so I think when we talk about the, like, why Fallout 2 is better than other games, or when that kind of shows up in the culture, I think this kind of thing is a part of that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like 100%. Because there's nothing, as far as I know, I can't think of another quest that's like this one in, like, Fallout 3 or New Vegas.
Old World Blues feels in some ways kind of like a big expansion of a lot of the conceits here. It's not one to one necessarily, but the types of gimmicks that, or like the sort of humor that's being worked with here seems to show up, I think, in that New Vegas DLC. So that's a thing that, like, sort of looks forward, but yeah, no, I can't think of anything that is quite as built upon the actual mechanics, the actual things that you are doing, and sort of the experience of playing this game in precisely the same way.
And so what I liked is the follow-up. So you met the plant too, right?
Yes, I did meet the plant.
Do you want to talk about it?
So on the opposite side of the map from the professor's laboratory is like a little garden or something, and there is a talking plant there. And it's one of it's the normal, like, enemy plant model that the same things we killed in Hakunin's garden back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like, sort of, like, calls you over, right? It's, like, talking to you. and it's how you first see it, I think, is, like, you just see, like, the barks above the head, right? Like, it's, like, talking to itself.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because I thought there's like a hidden tunnel. We'll talk about this in just a second. But there's like a hidden ladder right behind it, and I thought that the barks were coming from the ladder, and I couldn't really figure that out.
Yeah. So, like, you come over and you can just, like, talk to this plant, and it turns out the plant is one of the professor's prior experiments that he dumped, and the plant wants to be moved. It doesn't like where it is.
Well, it's so much better even than that, right? Because he says, when you talk to the professor the first time, he's like, yeah, I tried to make a plant super intelligent, and it didn't work. And then you can be like, or Tungsten can be like, well, why would you make a plant super intelligent? And he was like, well, because I'm trying to go from the lowest of the low. He's like, of course. And you talk to the plant, and the plant's like, yeah, I became hyper intelligent when I was but a seedling, but I knew that that professor would make me do stuff, and so I just pretended to not be intelligent, and he left me here. It's like, it is very much like a Muppets joke. It's that level of joke, which I like. And yeah, so just like you're saying, it hates where it is, and it says come back here with a shovel, and I didn't do that. Did you do that?
I didn't have a shovel, and I couldn't find a shovel in town, so I didn't.
Yeah.
So that's a thing I'm marking down for whenever I come back with that air purifier, I guess.
Oh, yeah, gotta do that. Well, so we'll find out about that later. Because, yeah, I also didn't have a shovel, and I was like, I'm not scouring around this town. It was, like, midnight last night when I was doing this, and I was like, I've done everything else except for this plant. I am I'm good. Hopefully Michael did it, but we'll update later. Other stuff, I guess we should just talk about missing people then.
Yeah, so that's, I think that's really the last one. So there, mm-hmm. Marcus tells us people have gone missing around town. No one knows where they are because they're missing. And he tells you to, does he even tell you to talk to anyone? I didn't put this down in my notes, but I remember being kind of confused about this because it feels like, despite the fact that it's a big deal, evidently, no one really talks about it.
Yeah, he just said there are missing people in town. Figure out what's up with that. And I had to like just walk around and talk to everybody.
Mm-hmm. So eventually you run into, I believe his name is Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you? That's a yes. You also met Dan?
I don't know if his name was Dan. There's a guy.
Yeah. Who is talking about his missing wife.
That I wrote down in my notes, missing wife guy.
Yes.
And it's a subculture of wife guy.
to the many types of wife guy, there is the missing wife guy, often seen on Dateline. Mm-hmm.
Oh, oof. Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, that's not the case here, though. Although, when you do ask, I do believe his name is Dan, you can ask him, like, well, you know, what did your wife look like? Like, you know, help me out here. He says she was, and this is a quote, blonde, sexy, and has the most incredible singing voice.
Mm-hmm. And also hates ghouls and super mutants.
Yes.
I think he puts that in, which I think, you know, tell me what you think here. I as soon as he said that, I thought, oh, she just moved to New Reno, which is like 10 miles to the west.
Like that was just your immediate thought.
That was my thought when he was like, oh, my wife is missing. She's attractive and she could sing really well. And she hates living here. I was like, okay, well, I guess she just moved. Like, that, it sounds like she ran away to live her life, you know, where those skills and talents matter. And also, where there's no mutants.
Well, here's the thing, Cameron, is that is human logic, not video game logic.
It's certainly not Fallout logic, let me tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I do not even remember how I ended up discovering what happened to his wife. Like, I know I did. I have it in my notes, but I have no idea how I ended up there. I guess it was because of the plant, because you mentioned the ladder already.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that's how I did it. I went about this completely, like, ass backwards. I talked to that guy, and I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll find your wife. And when you told me before I had played this, you were like, oh, just FYI, there's a quest that takes you to New Reno. Let's just save that and do that later. When I talked to him, I was like, oh, that's the quest in New Reno.
Oh, so I have actually intervened in the past and made this all come about. Okay.
You did. Mm-hmm. You've time looped yourself. You loopered yourself.
Yeah.
but no, so yeah, I saw the plant and I saw the, you know, there's like a bunch of, crops and stuff growing and there's a ladder going down under the ground. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. There's a ladder. I've not talked to anyone in the mine yet. I haven't done any of that stuff. I go down in there and I'm looking around. I'm scrolling around the map. And there's a ton of ants down here.
Mm-hmm.
There are two other ladders. And then there is a big pile of bodies.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, that's where the missing people are. There they go. And so you can search their bodies and you can find a letter to Zaius, who mm-hmm. owns the mine or operates the mine, from Jacob, who is like, hey, no, from Francis.
Yes, from Francis.
From Francis, who is just like, hey, just FYI, there's a conspiracy here of people who are trying to kill all the mutants. It's all these humans. We need to, like, we need to act, right, to preserve ourselves. So I'm just going to start killing them. Later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And so,
well,
I took
that's
that
not
letter.
Just it because, oh, okay. Well, I don't know how this worked for Tungsten, but like Twelinor got like a little, this is so weird. This is railroady is not the precise term, but like there's like a little bark that popped up over my head that was like, oh my gosh, there's a conspiracy. I should definitely not tell Marcus about this. Like, and that's not exactly what it said, but it was like, I should talk to like these two people before I talk to Marcus.
Oh, I don't think I got that. Or, I mean, maybe I didn't. I just didn't see it. No, so I just went and told Marcus immediately. I was like, all right. And I didn't even really, because I hadn't met Zaius yet. And yeah. I'm not quite sure I knew Francis's name because I didn't write it down, even after all that stuff had gone on. And so I was just like, all right, I guess I figured it out. Sherlock Holmes here. And so Tongson just like, I took it back to the sheriff and I was just like, hey, it appears. And I think weirdly enough, I believe I did not tell him the truth. I believe I lied.
I see.
And so on accident, because I didn't really understand what was going on. And so like nothing bad happened. No one went to jail.
Oh.
Yeah, nothing bad happened. And then I went and told Zaius, and he was like, look, I'm so sorry about that. I don't know what to tell you. And then he gave me the quest that takes me to New Reno. And then I went and talked to Francis, and Francis was like, yeah, I did it. And there was a conspiracy. And I was like, well, what's the proof of the conspiracy? And he was like, I don't know. I don't care. I killed these people. And I was like, well, that seems bad, right? Like, it seems like you're a bad person. He says, I think I'll just have to find some way to atone. And that's what? It. That's the end of the quest.
So he also had that conversation with me. I will say it takes on considerably stranger valences with Tongston's situation.
Yes, it's even more bizarre.
So the sort of my thinking in going to Marcus first is that it makes absolutely no sense to go to the two conspirators first, or like, so there are these two guys who are committing, like, it is clear that Marcus does not know what they are doing. Thing number one, like, they are extrajuridically murdering these people in the tunnels beneath the town. And for some reason, the game thinks that it's very important for me to think that I should go talk to them before I talk to the sheriff. Which just does not make sense. I have no idea why they would want me to do that, or like it's just a bizarre writing choice. But I think prior to this point, I had talked to the person who actually was at the center of this conspiracy. Do you know who it was?
The sweaty guy.
No, it was Jacob Two.
Oh, no, wait, maybe I did figure that out.
Right. So I think the confusion that we are exhibiting is indicative of something that is wrong with the writing here. And I don't mean wrong in like a, you know, well, actually, yes, I do mean wrong in like a, you maybe shouldn't write your game this way, because there are ways to approach, like, it is not clear at all what the heck is going on or why I should be doing the things that I am doing. Right. Jacob is this guy who lives over in the first screen, and he is like manufacturing chems, I think, with his wife who has, or his wife, his partner, his girlfriend. I don't know. It's a woman. I'm not even sure if she has a name. Because, for instance, Dan's wife's name was Dan's wife. It turns out that, like, rather than just being a friendly neighborhood chemist, Jacob, who, to be clear, is named after the Jacob who founded the town, right? Like, that's, like, all the sort of, like, multicultural ethos of Broken Hills. Jacob doesn't buy into that. And, in fact, when you ask him, like, what he is up, like, you can basically, like, talk about how non-humans, or like, I don't know what we want to call them, like mutants, parahumans, whatever.
Post-humans,
yeah, let's go for that. And when you talk about how ghouls and like, you can be racist about ghouls and super mutants with him, right? He kind of like dog whistles you when you first talk to him, and if you talk with him about this, he basically gives you a version of the Great Replacement Theory. Which is this racist conspiracy theory that like immigrants are going to like multiply rapidly and displace the quote-unquote like natural like white population of this or that country, and what Jacob believes is that this is going to happen with mutants, that there are going to be more and more mutants who are going to push out like regular humans and then eventually dominate them. Now, this is all horrible and awful, but I must say, kind of makes sense when someone like Marcus is your sheriff, who is constantly going on about how, like, the master had some really great ideas, actually, but also...
If only we could dip more people in FEV. I'm just out doing my rounds thinking about racial purity.
Yes. So Jacob's response is to do racial purity, but in the opposite direction. And he was apparently, like, you know, gathering a little cell of people who were going to band together and, like, murder and or drive out all of the mutants from Broken Hills. Hmm. That's what he was up to. Hmm. And when I talked to Marcus, I told him, like, hey, so, you know, Francis and Zaius did this, which I guess is bad because, you know, it was, like, illegal and all that. But also the conspiracy that they were afraid of, which for some reason they didn't tell you about, mm-hmm. Is very real. And, like, Jacob is totally planning, like, an ethno-nationalist coup. So Jacob and his partner end up in jail.
Well... I mean, truly, all extremes are bad, and the only safe place of truth is right there in the middle.
Mm-hmm. right there in the middle where you have all of the like, ideas and beliefs and feelings, positive feelings about the master race, but none of the conviction to act on them.
Exactly. Oof. Fallout. Got a lot going on here, and you were expressing incredulity that this is replicated across many different RPGs. But yeah, that's at least a lot more interesting than what I had. Did you tell the man about his wife getting killed?
I did, and he was sad about it.
Yeah, he. I had an option of telling him that she's not missing, but she's, like, torn in half. And I thought that was bad. I thought that was, like, a bad thing to say. Thanks, Fallout, for giving me that option. And then, but yeah, after you tell him that, he says, I think I need to have a cry now.
Aww.
Yeah.
So I've got a thought on the weirdness of the dialogue options, as as you just sort of pointed out, that there are always so many ways to just insult people that you're talking to or clearly upset them. With no real, like, basically, the game gives you so many ways of role-playing an asshole, but there is actually no way, or, like, there's no real benefit to role-playing as an asshole.
No.
Right? It's not like there's some secret asshole faction out there that's, like, going to give you extra rewards for being a jerk to people.
I'm building rep!
So... It occurs to me when one of the things people might be talking about when they talk about Fallout humor is reflecting on all of these really wacky, inappropriate dialogue choices that they had but did not choose, right? Mm. The joke is not really intended, or maybe not intended. Intent is maybe not the word to use here. But the joke is not actualized within, like, the play, right? Within, like, the play narrative or whatever, but rather, like, it happens one layer of abstraction up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's about having that interface that, like, you know, it gives you that option even if you don't choose it.
Yeah, I could have said blah blah.
Right.
Which is, I think, that was a big complaint when Fallout 4 released, Fallout 4, is that you couldn't see, like, the full response.
Right.
So yeah, I think that tracks 100%. In fact, I don't remember who it was, but someone in the Discord the other day when we were talking about Baldur's Gate 3, which has a kind of more gestural response interface as opposed to, you know, reading two sentences like it would be in, like, you know, Planescape Torment or something like that. Mm-hmm. Some people were talking about that in the Discord. They're like, oh yeah, they're like, part of the fun is looking at all the possible responses and then, like, actually choosing the one that you would say. So yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that's true.
And then also, this is just a little thought that we might want to end on, unless you have some other things to say, or, like, like a little closing, like, discussion.
Let's end on Michael's little thought.
Michael's little thought. This is toward the larger ongoing concern of, like, the Fallout satire debate.
Mm-hmm.
So it is occurring to me as we were playing Fallout 2 that the ways in which this game thinks about things in political terms and sort of sociopolitical terms is much more upfront than maybe a lot of sort of comparable RPGs at the time, or even video games generally. And so what I mean here is thinking about how the places that we have gone to recently have been like very materially focused or like materially based, right? The like Vault City grows up out of a vault. The geckos or the ghouls in Gecko operate a power plant. The people in Reading are working a gold mine. The people in here in Broken Hills are operating this uranium mine, and this also puts them in kind of the crosshairs of the larger sort of surrounding powers, right? Vault City, the NCR, and New Reno, these sort of like imperial or like proto-imperial kind of forces that want to incorporate these particular like, you know, material productive like regions. So what I think about this is that the concerns, right, just basic level, like what is making like the plot happen here, or like the plot outside of like the main character's sort of arc, what is making things happen in the world is very close to something like social realism,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, as opposed to kind of the weird onto-theological concerns of something like Baldur's Gate or the philosophical concerns of Planescape, the concerns of Fallout, even as we kind of like, you know, give it some raspberries for the way it handles some of it, is very much like, what forces are moving people in the world? And the answer to those questions are very often kind of this interesting mesh of ideological and like material kind of factors.
Yeah, there. I think there's a real mismatch just across the board in this game in particular between the kind of bird's eye view that you just described, right? Which is like the world and its situation, how it's built out.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the micro everyday movements of the people in it, which kind of don't have anything to do with that sometimes. And it really feels to me, and I have, you know, I don't have any insight into the development of Fallout 2, but it really does feel like someone was like, okay, here is a 10-page document about how this world works, right? And so like, and they really thought that out, right? About this kind mm-hmm. of, I mean, it's basically what you just described is like the political theory of zones of influence, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
these are very particular kind of power projections and materials aggregation by these big states or these like pseudo states, city states, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels like someone described all of that and then like handed out each individual city to different people to like actually implement. And just like some people chose to do it and some people did not.
Right. But sort of, I guess, you know, my conclusion or like one of my concluding thoughts here is like maybe one of the reasons people mistake or not, I'm going to say it right. The reason people mistake Fallout for satire is that because it is humorous, but it is humorous within contexts that feel sort of socially real. Like there's a category error, right?
Mm.
Because wacky things are happening in this world that has what I recognize as fairly plausible kind of material political machinations going on in it. It is satire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? I think that's right. And I think it gets like so close regularly. Mm-hmm. Right, it gets within like spitting distance of actually being satire sometimes, but just can't commit. I mean, I think it's got like a commitment problem. but we will investigate more of that next time when we go to where are we going, Michael?
I mean, I was going to go to New Reno.
Let's go to New Reno. That's where we're going. Have you played that yet?
I have not.
Ooh. Me neither. Okay, well, next episode, we're going to New Reno. Michael, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, at Warren is Dead.
Check out everything we do at Ranged Touch on Twitter. You can also support us on Patreon in these uncertain and terrible times. Money goes up and down in lots of ways. If you enjoy the show and you would like to support it in any kind of way, checking us out on Patreon and giving as little as a dollar a month really does matter quite a bit. It helps us pay for our hosting and things like that. It helps us kind of spin up new ideas for stuff, and we've got quite a few cool ideas coming up. So that's all to say, you can do that. If you support at $5 a month, you actually get like a secret Let's Play I'm doing, and then, or it's not a secret Let's Play, but it's a Let's Play. The monthly podcast coming back with Danny and I just kind of talking about whatever. Not this month's episode, because we're recording several episodes in advance, but we've talked about things such as tabletop RPGs, Morrowind, things like that. I think you would really enjoy it. And if you haven't hit that subscribe or the like button down below this video, please consider doing that. If you like watching these videos, I'm sure you would like the other stuff that we see or that we do or that we whatever. I think you would like our other videos, so check those out. And Michael's working on a video series of his own.
I am. That's a secret for now, too.
It is, but there's going to be... Can we say it's a deep dive into a game?
It is not the deepest dive I could do into the game, but yeah, it'll be a pretty deep dive compared to, I don't know, any other video content I've done, which is nothing.
There you go. So get excited about that. It'll be good, and you'll find that here on the Range Touch YouTube channel. So thanks so much. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Except for